to. I thank you that you have settled your world in heaven and earth, and therefore we choose to settle it in our own lives. Because you were, Father, you have come to me from above your name. Even in the book of John, Father, you said that in the beginning was the Word, and the Word was with God, and the Word was God. You are the inspired,
God with the Word.
Hey, good evening, Long Island. You're listening to WGBB tonight, 1240 on your AM dial on Long Island's oldest radio station. And my name is Pat Fenton. My guest tonight is Eugene B. Bergman, the author of Excelsior, You Fathead, The Art and Enigma of Gene Shepard, which is published by Applause Theater and Cinema Books. So get ready out there in radio land, as old Shep would say. Tonight we're going to venture into, Gene Shepard country with the perfect guy, an author that knows the way in and out of his life. Eugene Bergman, who is currently a designer of artist books, spent 34 years designing exhibits for the New York City American Museum of Natural History. He's been a Gene Shepard fan since he first started listening to his radio broadcast in 1956. And what better way to bring him on with them a little bit of jazz music, in the background with Chris Connor singing Gone with the Wind. We're pleased to have him live at the radio station tonight. Good evening, Gene. It's great to have you on board here, and everyone down at the station here was excited to hear you were coming on, particularly the man who makes me look good in there, Tom Ross, my engineer. Riding shotgun with us tonight, another Gene Shepard fan. I want to jump right in because there's so many things to talk about, Gene. The first thing I'd like to ask you, are there any books out there on Gene Shepard's life, and what influenced you to write one? The first question is, to your knowledge, are there any other books out there?
There are no books devoted to Gene Shepard.
That's what I thought.
There is one book that came out a couple of years ago called Seriously Funny that deals with several dozen of the rather far-out comedians of the 50s and 60s, such as Mort Saul, etc.
Yeah.
And that includes half of one chapter on Gene Shepard. The other half is devoted to Bob and Ray, another great comedy team. But mine is the only book.
I was so surprised when I thought that myself from reading your book, and it really surprises me. I mean, it's like that often happens. You think like, God, there's people you think about, and you say, there must be 10 books out there. How can I write one? I'll be repeating these. Then you find out there's none. Now, what influenced you? I know you're a big Shepard fan, but what made you, what influenced you to write this book, Jim?
Well, I found that when I read the obituaries of Gene Shepard in October 99, I realized I hadn't really thought very much about him in quite a few years. And I realized, as I like to say, I'd lost an old friend.
Yeah.
Somebody who had influenced me as a college student and who I felt was, whose ideas and sensibility were still a part of my life. And I began making notes and talking to people about Shepard and filing away notes in file folders until all of a sudden I realized it's not Shepard. I know how I think this a book about him should be written. I'm going to write it.
And good for you. You did. And we thank you for doing it. And you know what amazes me is that, he was an observer of life around us. He had a way of doing monologues on the detail of life and those life and the fine observations of life that go by a lot of people. You know, somebody once said to me, Gene, that what writers do, and as you know, I'm a writer myself. This is kind of like a side gig for me doing the radio show, which I love doing, and it's an extension of my writing in a lot of ways. Somebody once said to me that writers have the ability to kind of like stop life and slow it down, to look at it. And that's what Shepard had the ability to do. A lot of things that zip by us. I'll give you a quick example that impressed me once. I remember once he was doing a show where he noticed that taxi cabs in the 50s had these wacky names to the companies, you know?
I used to love those names.
Yeah, do you remember any of them? Who would notice that?
Specific ones, but I used to take note of them at the time.
Yeah, so he did a thing about that, and he was truly a brilliant monologuist. He came along and, certainly I think of James Thurber, you know, who had that same sort of ability, but I think Shepard certainly took it further, you know, in many ways, you know. You listened to tons of these shows, these monologues. How many tapes did you listen to?
Well, at this point, I've probably heard better than 600 of his shows, most of which were 45 minutes long.
Wow. Now, did you actually a lot of these shows, by the way, for our listeners, there are parts of them in the book, and sometimes whole sections, which is just great. It's like sitting down and being back in front of the radio again. Did you transcribe these yourself, Gene?
Yes, I did. Yeah. Now, of course, I didn't transcribe the any whole broadcast. That would wear out my fingers.
And,
but what I would do is listen to the programs, and when I heard something that I thought was worthwhile and that made a particular point for me, I would stop the tape and go back and start writing it out word by word in longhand. Until I got to the point where I thought what he had to say was complete, then I'd type it up and see how I might use it in the book.
It's just a great the way you set it up, because it just tells us, you know, so much about Shepard. And he literally, it seemed, was telling the story of his life on the radio, one extended monologue that went on and on and on. And like the story, I suppose, of anyone's lives, sometimes he might repeat himself and tell a little bit of a different version of it, or in some of the detail and all. Well, I guess my question is this, is with all the amazing research you did on this, and you're truly a Shepard scholar, I mean, after doing all this and you were coming into it, how much of this part of his life that he told us night after night was true, and how much did you find out was just something he made up?
Well, it's interesting that most people who listen to him believe that every word he said was true, something that had happened to him. Now, when he gave his opinion of something, or he made a comment about life in general, I believe that's totally true.
Yeah.
But it's pretty well understood at this point that most of his stories about childhood and other parts of his life were pretty much made up, and he basically admitted that in various interviews.
Now, you say in the book, you take us back to Hammond, Indiana, is it?
That's where he grew up.
Where he came out of. And you say in the book how he just seemed to, like, for a guy who seemed like such a great guy, he liked to go hang around with and have a couple of beers with or something, there was a dark side to him, where he kind of cut himself off from his family and kind of came up to New York and reinvented who he was. I mean, I'm not using your word. I'm saying the impression I got from things that you said. Like, yes. He didn't see his... He had a brother, Randy, which was actually... Randy it was, right?
Yes.
Now, tell me a little bit about that. Did he cut himself off from where he grew up and the family and kind of reinvent himself? Is that a good statement?
Yes, it is. He when he was growing up, in a sense, he obviously enjoyed his childhood, as you can tell through his stories. But time after time, he would talk on the radio about how he was so happy to get out of the Midwest and what he thought of as the small mind of Hammond, Indiana, and get to the ultimate intellectual capital of the world that he just dreamed of, New York City.
There were no restrictions on you, and you could be actually who you wanted to be in there. Now you interviewed a lot of different people like Norman Mailer and Barry Farber. One thing I found interesting, that he, at some point in the book, he tells a friend of his, like, he was always snipping at Mailer, you know, and the two of them worked on the Village Voice together, you say, and they were both doing columns there, and of course, we, Norman Mailer was one of the founders, I believe, of the Village Voice, and, you know, at some point he tells a friend of his, you interview a friend who says he had a fight with Mailer, a fist fight, literally, and... You know, Mailer has been known to be a boxer, and that's one of the things he always prided himself in. I had an opportunity to meet him years ago, and I almost got into a fight with him. He was drinking at some sort of a party. But Shepard claimed he actually got into a fight, and you quote his friend as saying, I tore him to ribbons, or I beat him to ribbons.
That was to that effect.
Now, you, when you talked to Mailer, did you have the... nerve to kind of somehow sugarcoat that and say, you know, did Shepard kick your butt, man? Or, I know you wouldn't.
Let me tell you that it's almost impossible to get through to Norman Mailer to
I've heard that.
Questions. So what I did was I found an intermediary who knew him, and I sent Norman Mailer a very nice letter with some questions, and I sent him also a list of questions.
Yeah.
And he responded to my letter and to my list of questions, so I did not meet him eye to eye.
So
there was no fisticuffs between me and Mailer, believe me.
So that's never been confirmed, though. Do you? What's your gut feeling on that? You think you, from what you got to know about Chevy, you think he was the sort of guy that would mix it up with someone? He's a big guy, right?
Well, I believe, there's no real way of knowing, but I believe that he probably made it up.
Mm-hmm.
That Shepard probably made it up.
Yeah.
Now, Norman Mailer told me in writing that at first he told me he didn't even remember Mailer, and then he said, oh, yes.
He didn't remember Shepard.
He didn't remember Shepard, and then later he said, yeah, I have this vague recollection of Shepard. And my feeling is that this was Mailer's biggest put-down of all.
Absolutely.
To say... Oh, I vaguely remembered Shepard.
You're 100% right. And we all know he worked right close to him. And,
right. They
you know,
to know
that is the biggest put-down to do that. I'm getting a signal from my engineer in there, Tom, that we got to cut to the break. Stay with us, Gene. My guest is Eugene Bergman. Excelsior, you fathead. The Art and Enigma of Gene Shepard is the book. Pick it up. It's just simply, it's fascinating. Don't touch that dial, as they say in Radioland and Gene Shepard Land.
I dreamed a dream one day, and now that dream is here beside me. Long the skies were overcast, but now the clouds are past. For here at last,
I'm Joe Salzone with this week's PSBB. Do you enjoy live folk music? Next Friday, join the Our Times Coffee House as they welcome Northern Lights. For three decades, the group has wowed audiences with their blend of bluegrass, jazz, and classical music. Are you or someone you care about a triathlete planning to compete in August? Next Thursday, join the Plainview Old Bethpage Library as they host a triathlon clinic. Next Sunday, the Mutton Town Preserve would like to introduce you to some birds. Bring your binoculars and join them for their early bird walk. Some events may require advanced registration or a fee. For more information on any of these events, call the WGBB two-way talk lines at 631-888-8811 or send an email to WGBBPSA@yahoo.com. With this week's PSVB, I'm Joe Salzone from WGBB, the station that serves your community.
Are you losing your hair? Are you tired of looking older than you feel? Medical Hair Restoration has a very special free offer just for you. Get ready to make a toll-free call to order. The Natural Decision DVD is absolutely free with no obligation. It answers your questions about advanced techniques that will help restore your own natural hair. Get to see amazing before and after pictures. Real estate developer Craig C. says, quote, I wanted to look younger. MHR was my fountain of youth. You owe it to yourself to get a copy of your free DVD or video now. Call today, and for a limited time, you can receive a $300 gift certificate towards your procedure. You don't have to try covering up your hair loss any longer. Call Medical Hair Restoration today for your free consultation and DVD. 800-647-8077. That's 800-647-8077. The most natural-looking hair is your own. Call 800-647-8077. That's 800-647-8077.
They say that radio is the soundtrack to our lives. Well, let WGB be the music coordinator. You like great music? Join Manos Galanis for a variety of music, news, and comedy segments on Hellenic Harmonies. Weekday nights at 10 and Saturday mornings at 9. Only here on AM 1240 WGBB.com and 1240 WGBB. For 80 years, proud to be the station that serves your community.
You're listening to the station that serves your community, WGBB.
And then I knew that all.
Hey, we're back Long Island with my guest, Eugene B. Bergman, the author of an incredibly intriguing book, Excelsior, You Fathead, The Art and Enigma of Gene Shepard. But first this. Coming up after WGBB tonight is 6:30 to 7 is NBA Survivor. 7 to 7:30 is Master Control. 7:30 to 8, WA Factors. 8 to 9, You Ought to Know with Barry Polchin. 9 to 10 is Halftime Howie. 10 to 11 is Hellenic Harmonies with our own Manos Galanos. And 11 to 12 is the Life Hour. And 12 to 6 a.m. is one of my favorites, Gospel All Night Through the Morning with James the Boy Wonder. Give him a listen, save your soul. This brief message from your community station here at WGBB. No one discusses current events like Barry and Lorraine. You want to know the show where they discuss current events and more, Tuesday nights at 8 Eastern. Only here on WGBB, the station that serves your community. We're back with Eugene B. Bergman. Gene, I want to jump right into this question. We're talking about how Shepard recreated this world and his observations, which really made life kind of, and it kind of like made, life more, less serious, if you will, reading the newspapers all the time with these awful headlines. I was one of, I suppose, millions who listened to Gene Shepard over radio when I was growing up in Brooklyn, and I went in the Army, came out, and I was still listening to him in the 60s, and here he was. I thought just a nice guy telling stories that he packed with details about everyday work and stuff. But after reading your book, it seems to me that there was definitely a dark side there. He seemed like an awful father to his kids. He seemed to ignore them. And now you interviewed his daughter and his son, right, Gene?
Well, I interviewed his son extensively through a series of emails in which I asked questions, and he responded quite fully. I met Shepard's daughter, and I spoke with her briefly, and I do quote her slightly in the book, but I did not really interview her.
Yeah, but you certainly give us a lot of detail on what his life is like. They're living up in Princeton, New Jersey, apparently. He's living pretty good. He's driving around in a sports car. Every year he goes to Princeton to do a show, and every year these kids, you say in the book, say, God, maybe he'll come by the house. He left them. He came one day and announced he left. He came back, you say in the book, then he leaves again, and he just seemed to have no emotional connection with them. And in fact, they called him Gene, like, instead of Dad, you know. What was that all about, do you think, that part of him that would cut himself off? He didn't seem to be able to connect with his kids the way a father would.
Well, from what I gathered interviewing a number of his close friends and associates, he had trouble connecting with other people, which is surprising because on the air, you as a listener felt totally connected
exactly.
to him.
Exactly.
You felt that you were on his wavelength, and that he was an intellectual companion, a mentor, maybe even a father figure.
Yeah.
And yet, not only towards his kids did he fail to connect, but he, for a number of people that I interviewed, they said that he was so self-involved that he did not seem to be able to connect with them either.
Yeah, like at one point you say, like, you quote him even. I mean, in one of his interviews, I guess, where he's up in Jersey doing the radio station out of there. It's like 130 degrees, he says, in the station. He's in there all alone, no engineer. He's doing everything. And he's sitting up there in his jockey shorts. Right. He says, sweating, and he's unrolling this whole story of his life. It's almost like telling us about the universe, and you get the feeling if he knew himself, he probably wouldn't know. You know, if he had read what was written about him, and it was someone else, he probably wouldn't have liked the person.
Now,
did he just get so pulled into all of this?
I think so. One of the people I interviewed was Larry Josephson, who knew him and who was somewhat influenced by him as a broadcaster. And Josephson said that, maybe you should never get to meet your heroes because
yeah.
they turn out to be not quite as good as one would like to think. And
yeah.
his Shepherd's WOR general manager for 10 years, who became his good friend, when I asked him, his name is Herb Saltzman, I asked him how this could be, that the Shepherd was
yeah.
so different from what one thought of listening to him. And Herb Saltzman said, well, maybe it comes with the territory.
Yeah.
And Josephson said, anyone who spends that much effort, intellectual and emotional effort, trying to put themselves, their whole being, across on the air,
yeah.
maybe they don't have anything or very much of anything left over.
Yeah, I think that's true. And you bring that across, and we see this whole picture of him in the book. And it's a fabulous book, and anyone who reads it, they can figure some of this out for themselves, or at least try. What I think of is, you know, he wrote about the dark side so much in a humorous way. You know, like he calls, like you write in your book, he describes life as a veil of tears that we're only in for a short time. And he's kind of like saying that to us, we think, tongue-in-cheek. And then he talks about all these matters, and it makes one a reader think, like, you know what? Maybe he was serious instead of kidding us about life being so miserable. Because he says it over and over again.
You know, it's interesting that the ultimate effect you get from Shepherd is a great joy in all of existence.
Yes.
But yet, underneath is this dark current.
Yeah.
And he once told a story that I quote in the book about a sea captain who was interviewed after 30 years at sea and
yeah.
who said that he hated the sea.
Yeah,
and the newspaper interviewers said, he must be joking.
Yeah.
And Shepherd said, what do you mean he must be joking? This is true. I'm sure he was. He really meant it.
Yeah. And
this is what Shepherd was. Yeah. He really meant the dark side as well as the joyous side.
And you have Shepherd say in the book, we always do that. When somebody gets very honest with us, we go, he must be joking.
Right.
And, you know, we're seeing that again, by the way, and it's almost like Shepherd was a prophet in the sense, recently, Walt Whitman, the poet, was quoted, someone found an old paper on him, where he said, don't become a poet. It's a waste
article.
Of time. Get yourself a job in a factory setting print. And he said, I'm serious. You know, it was kind of like saying, Mama don't raise your boys up to be poets. So Shepherd was ahead of himself. And, you know, again, can you imagine what Shepherd would say about that Whitman statement? Boy, I mean, he could do a riff on that, I bet. You know.
Well, Shepherd, in later years, got very unhappy about the way radio treated him. He felt that radio had great potential, but that he didn't get as far and he didn't get as much renown and respect as he should have gotten. And he became rather bitter towards it in later years.
Yeah. It's now he influenced. It's a ton of people you write in the book, and you know, on the list that you I'm looking at that old clock up on the wall. Boy, the time flies when you're doing a show like this. We've got about 5 minutes left, Gene. And you mentioned part of the influence he had, on, well, he came before them and kind of set it up for people like radio show host Don Imus, Vince Gelser, Jonathan Schwartz, Garrison Keillor, which is kind of obvious with Keillor. Imus, I don't know. I guess he's doing some sort of a raw version of what Shepard did. He's doing
a
monologue.
Good way of putting it.
Yeah. And then you got Rush Limbaugh. How the heck can he get in there?
Well, I think anybody that just could get up on the radio and talk and extemporize was probably a little bit influenced by Shepard, knowingly or not, they wouldn't be doing what they're doing exactly the same way if Shepard hadn't been there a few decades earlier.
Well, you've done a great job on this book. I mean, but what you've presented us with, too, is a lot. There's so much I didn't know in there, and I thought I knew a lot about Shepard. The book is called Excelsior, You Fathead, The Art and Enigma of Gene Shepard. It's put out by Eugene B. Bergman. You talk about how you mentioned you didn't like J.D. Salinger. And I'm kind of surprised because, you know, Salinger, you would think Holden Caulfield would surely be a Gene Shepard fan. And the other thing you mentioned, which I found interesting, part of the enigma, he loved the poetry form of haiku.
Yes, occasionally he would read some. And that is a little bit surprising because it's so condensed. In its ideas, while Shepard, of course, was so expansive.
Yeah, it's... why wouldn't he like Salinger, I wonder? You know,
well, the one thing he said was that he felt that Holden Caulfield was a little bit too sensitive. That is, I am so sensitive, and all the rest of the world, they're all slobs.
Yeah. We got about a minute and a half left. In a brief answer, if you could, Gina, a lot of this material was stolen, right? He felt, and it seems like it was when you look around at some of the...
Well, he got very, very angry at what he felt as theft of some of his material off the air. He said that some of those comedians, those seriously funny comedians we mentioned earlier, not only listened to him, but obviously stole some of his material.
Do you think we'll ever see the likes of a Gene Shepard again?
Absolutely not.
Well, with that, we're going to close. The book is, I thank you for being on the air with us, coming down to the station, Gene. Thank you. It's a fabulous book, Excelsior, You Fathead, The Art and Enigma of Gene Shepard. Pick it up at Amazon.com or Barnes & Noble. And if they're out of the book, get them to order it. Because from what I understand, it's into its second print, and it's surely going to be a third, and there's a lot more. It's the real story of Gene Shepard with all of the shows practically in there. So thanks again for coming down, Gene.
Thank you very much.
We're going out listening to a jazz song. As time goes by, this is for you, Shep. It's kind of a Bulgar thing, that a Casablanca image is. And you know what, Shep? Still the same old story. That much hasn't changed. As time goes by, this one's for you, Shep, wherever you are. Good night, Long Island!
No matter what the future brings, as time goes by.